CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is, what is today? Oh, look at that. There's Suresh Nirida in the middle of our screen. It is Friday morning. It's the 13th. It's Friday the 13th. Did you know that? Now you know.
I do. I'm very superstitious.
Oh, boy. How are you, Sureshni? Nice to see you.
Good morning. I love your intro track. It's so rock and roll, man.
Well, cool. I was trying to play something else for you now, but it didn't seem to work for some reason.
Don't you have any Bhangra? I mean.
Oh, please. Yeah. That wouldn't have been like slightly racist. Here comes Sureshni. Let me play a whole bunch of Bhangra. How the hell are you?
Punjabi MC.
I know.
Oh, I'm so good. I'm so good. The last time I think you and I chatted must have been about a year ago.
Oh yeah.
Was it a year ago? Yeah. And I'm saying, safety girl, what do you have?
I know. So
you're doing well.
Apparently
I'm very good.
Apparently you're moving houses and you've got a whole lot of rooms just full of packets and boxes and bags.
Yes.
And, oh my God.
I know.
That's got it. That's
apparently. I don't know. People say to me that if you renovate, which we actually started off doing, if you renovate, moving house, those are like the baselines for a divorce because they test people's patience.
Oh, big time.
But Lee and I are good. But yes. Yeah.
Well,
because I'm a hoarder. I realize this. I thought I was a collector. And he asks me, why do I have 5 million things? And I was like, I don't know. It just rocked up here.
Well,
so yeah, I'm decluttering. Terrible.
So we've got a feature on a Monday that we've been doing for a while with the South African Gold Coin Exchange. It's called Collectomania. And the difference between hoarders and collectors is still not completely clear to me. It seems to me that there's a very fine line between those two, you know? There are collectors.
Well, I'm sentimental.
So what kind of stuff do you keep?
Okay, so I collect, first of all, snow globes. That is the thing that I love. People, see, I knew it because no one gets my love for these things, right? It's because as a kid, I was obsessed with American culture.
Okay.
And I thought every kid needed a snow globe. So everywhere, any family member, or specifically, he travels much more, he brings me snow globes. I mean, I've got snow globes from the DRC. I mean, what on earth? But they've got snow globes.
Stop, because I actually want to have you on Collectomania one morning because that's the right places. Because I didn't realize you had a serious collection. I thought you were just like someone who had we had a guy on this week who's got like 12 shot glasses, and then we've got these people who collect, like, they've spent millions on their collections. So you've got everyone
in between. No.
And now I can tell you're a serious one. So you reckon you've got more than 30?
Oh, yeah, 100%, more than 30. And the sizes vary. I also have seasonal ones. So a friend of mine actually bought me massive Christmas ones. And all I'm looking for now is a Diwali one. I mean, a Diwali version snow globe.
Where are you going to find a Diwali version snow globe?
Obviously in China. Somebody's going to go to China along the way and send it down to me, but it'd be so beautiful. But when this process of packing started, I found my box because Lee says, the first thing you should pack away are your snow globes. You don't really use them. I'm like, but that's my inspiration.
Of course.
So I started packing, and then I realized I'm into 3 crates now, and this might be a problem because he's going to ask me, what am I doing with this? I love it. It's people collect spoons, man. I collect snow globes, and it's just something that I've collected from as a child.
If you love things,
I'm allowed.
Of course you're allowed, and that's one of the best things about being an adult. I mean, I look at my brother who collects action figures and Lego and all that kind of thing, and I think that part of it is because he felt deprived as a child. You know, we our parents didn't spoil us, which I think was a good thing. But I think he's making up for that now in his adulthood by buying all these things that he wished he had when he was a kid.
100%. Because growing up, I used to watch those rom-coms and those American movies.
Yeah.
I'm so obsessed with all things American as a kid. I even wanted yellow pencils, yellow notepads. If I see a yellow... I promise you, every time Lee travels to the States, which is quite often, that's a lot of where his work is based, he takes photos of random yellow school buses. And he goes,
Yeah,
babe. I'm like, that is so romantic. So,
I got to say...
Yes, the snow globe is a childhood thing. So,
I remember when you two started dating, and then when you eventually got married, and I kind of, you know, you weren't really like on my show all the time, but you were part of the sort of extended family there at Five. And I remember we used to talk about this, but you two have maintained probably one of the best and I don't want to put pressure on you here or jinx anything,
no,
but it's one of the best relationships. Like, there's just such love, and you seem to continue to love each other. I wish that was possible for everybody, because I know it's hard work. Any marriage is hard work, but it seems to me that you guys have just, you've got something special going on, and it's never gone away. It's great.
Oh, thank you. We're going to be married for 15 years this year. And Willie always, so we're so different. We always talk about this with my daughter, because she says, if the two of you were in high school, would you have been friends? I said, no. Daddy would have thought I was a nerd. He was one of those popular kids. He never would have been my friend. He always says I'm like a teacher's pet, and I always want to do things virtuously.
Right.
And when we got married, obviously we come from totally different cultures and backgrounds. And even like our personalities, I'm very like, okay, very sweet and everything, you know, very religious, and he's this ultimate party animal. But he says the one thing that I think has worked is that I've never tried to change him, and I think that's why our marriage is what it is. I know that this is who he came in the marriage as, and he knows who I am, and neither of us try to change that. And
but
if you want to be a party animal, drink, go do it.
How many people do you know who try to do exactly the opposite? Like, especially girls see a guy and they go, he's got potential, but I could make him better, you know? And it's
so many.
It's a big problem because, as the old adage goes, I've said it a lot of times on the show, but I love it, and it's so true. Often, a man will meet a woman hoping she never changes, but she does. And a woman will meet a man hoping she can change him, but she really can't.
She can't. And I told myself that from the very beginning.
That's where the disconnect happens.
100%. And you have to go in it consciously. Mm-hmm. And I think I was very conscious from the beginning that he was so different to me. And I was like, okay, this is who he is. And I think even I said from a religious perspective, I said, listen, dude, I want to get married using a dot and a thali, which is obviously the yellow string that we tie as South Indians. And I'd like to wear a sari. And he goes, okay, I'm going to Google everything. I'm like, you do know that I'm Indian. He's like, I don't know. You're just a nice girl. And I said, Google everything, because this is who I am. But I think, you know, in our religion, we don't really convert, but this is who I am, and I really don't want to change anybody, and I don't want to change myself. So this is, are you cool? And he's like, yes, I feel there's a connection with you and I, and let's take this, you know, 1 year at a time, and this is it. And I think that's why it is what it is, and we're very understanding and mature and conscious, constantly like thinking about, okay, let him be. He loves photography, he loves wildlife. I love that too, but I'm not getting up at 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning anymore. I'm like, you do, babe, go, enjoy, you know?
I think that's great. Yeah, that's probably very, very good advice for a lot of people who are still teething and trying to change each other and trying to be the same and fit in with each other's lives in every way. And sometimes you let people be themselves, because that whole person is a whole person you fell in love with, and you're a whole person.
Correct.
Why should either of you have to, you know, bend double to make it
my
work?
My dad always said, our identity is very important. He said, you know, my dad was like, obviously in the beginning, he was so scared. He was like, listen, he's very different, but you must remain who you are. And I said, of course, Dad, you've taught me well, but also I am my own person. We all come into this world that, you know, that when I MC weddings, right? I MC weddings all the time, and I love it. And people always, those speeches happen, and then people say, oh, you complete me. And I always say, actually not. You were a complete person when you arrived, and you actually just...
But you can't say that to them at the wedding, right? You can't go like, oh...
No, I tell them afterwards.
Yeah, that was a bullshit speech. You can't complete them. What are you, full of nonsense?
Oh, when I hear that... Exactly. And when I hear that, I go, okay, let's see how this goes. But that's what it is. I've seen extreme couples where they dress like each other, and that's crazy.
Where did they get that from, that Tom Cruise movie? That you complete me nonsense. Was it from
a Tom Cruise movie?
Yeah, it was from...
Jay Maguire.
Yeah,
Jay Maguire.
The sports agent one.
And Renee Zellweger. It's not real. And there's so many real facets of marriage that you'll have, you know, we learn. Every day we're learning something new about each other. We're learning to be patient. COVID, in the 2 years, obviously him working from home, I've almost started to sound like him. Yes, we will circle back to that formula again. And then, yes, that is a great point for us. So now, like, okay, so he's an engineer, right? So he's super smart. So now I'm picking up all this, the volumetrics of the capacity and the capacity of this and this pump and this valve. But that's the thing, as a partner thing, you end up, and he has Indian lingo down to the T.
You're joking.
He's picked up it. Oh, Lee, he's more Indian than I am, and my parents love it. Because when they speak and use certain phrases, Lee's on it, hey? Even Tamil phrases, which is really special. And So my father hears Lee dropping one or two Tamil phrases. Oh, look at my son, look at that child.
Well, listen, you talk about being a little superstitious, and for a lot of people, Friday the 13th is, it's dangerous, and you want to be careful. I mean, there's some good news this morning, and I've been watching this price, which I shouldn't do all the time, but the Bitcoin price has gone back up to 30,000. It was really, really in the fucking doldrums yesterday. And I looked at this, and I thought, oh, my God. There is just nowhere we can run because everything seems to be going down at the moment. It's just such a mess. So for the people who are extremely worried, it looks like it's ticking back up at 30,500 at the moment, but not great anyway. Here's something Ruth says. She said there's a lunar eclipse this Sunday and Monday night, right? So Sunday night, Monday morning. Things are definitely full of energy at the moment. I don't know what the lunar eclipse means, but, you know, our ancestors used to be so... no matter where they come from, anywhere, when anything happened in the skies, it was like, uh-oh, this is good or this is bad. They would usually default to it's bad because if it was unusual, it probably meant something terrible was going to happen. So if you are a person who knows something about these kinds of things, or if you just, you know, if you're into the more woo-woo spiritual side of astronomy, then let us know what that means. But I mean, I'm kind of curious because it is. I don't care about Friday the 13th. I've got a bunch of things to do today. I'm just glad it's Friday. I love Fridays. And by the way, if you're wondering where Leanne Moll is this morning, she's got load shedding, so it must be because Friday the 13th is bad news for her.
You know what the Mercury retrograde, right?
Oh my God, I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Okay, so it's like the energies are off its axis a little bit. So everyone's talking about how your flights might be delayed, technology is going to fail you, and I think it affects. So I love astrology. It is part of like Hinduism. A lot of the things that we do in Hinduism is based on astrology, even down to how your name is selected according to your birth and all of that. Right? So I grew up with that. Yeah. So when an Indian baby is born, they usually document like what time was the child born. Mm-hmm. You would phone your local guru or your priest or your pundit and say, listen, the baby was born at 2:57.
Yeah.
And then he would go to the charts and the Hindu astrology charts, and from there he can determine what the ideal letters of the name should be, because that means the forecast for your child would be one that is positive. So you don't just choose, I really feel like Chelsea's the name for my kid, and then she goes, oh, hold on, it's actually the letter D-E. Something as definitive as a D-E. Then you go, okay, maybe it's Deandra or whatever it is. And that's how children's names are determined. So, yeah, you consult a book, and then it kind of says, okay, if you go with this, the energies are good, the alignment of the stars, where the child's astrological, like the sun and where the moon rising, all of that. Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a very serious thing.
For me, it is, because, like, I know I don't sweep the house at night. Because my mom said it's bad luck. You just don't sweep the house at night. You don't sweep away your good luck or your Lakshmi. That's so a lot of those things. And Mercury retrograde. You know, copper. You're gonna laugh. This is my whole life.
No, go on.
My grandfather insisted to drink from a copper. You know, like a copper copper cup.
Yes.
Because of the energy. The energy of what you put into your body. And I was like, I don't understand this. Maybe it's just an old grandfather thing. But things like that, the little cup of bangle, he swore by those things. And they're very connected. He feels everything is connected to the earth. That's why a lot of our prayers and rituals give back to the earth. So and we ground ourselves by walking barefoot. And
I find this stuff very interesting, because Hinduism is probably the one religion that, particularly out of the Eastern religions, that I know the least about. I've done a little bit of reading and background and research into Shinto, into Buddhism, obviously into the three monotheisms, so Judaism and Christianity and Islam. But I don't know a huge amount about Hinduism. And I love hearing this stuff. I mean, the whole pantheon of gods is just fascinating. And, you know, the smaller kind of deities that each village has its own deity, and each family can even have their own, which is kind of more ancient than anything else that we've got in terms of religion. I think Hinduism is the oldest religion on earth. It is, right?
Absolutely. And it is, yeah, absolutely. And it's very calm. It's about love. It's about, you know, loving community, doing seva. Seva means community, service to mankind. That's like the baseline for the religion. I learn every day. Like you, there are many deities. I choose my favorites. I choose the ones that align to me. Mm-hmm. Same with my family. And like my mom and dad choose a very simplistic route. Very spiritual. We do all of the prayers and stuff. My mom was like, you know what, whatever you feel you align and connect with, then go with that. You don't have to overcomplicate things. And yeah, I think it's a very peaceful religion, very colorful. I just love the stories that go with it. I love the stories of love, being good to each other, conquering evil, always coming back to do good for your mom and your dad, do good for the elders of the community. And I always like giving back in that way. It's a beautiful religion. I think it's often misunderstood because people often think that, oh, is it about idol worshiping? And that's often the criticism that we get. And it's not.
Yeah, sure, but that's looking at it through the lens of Western religions, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me. I mean, all of this stuff, I find it fascinating. Congo Chris says, I judge your Indianness based on the quality of your Indian desserts. I need samples.
Friend, I make a very good soji with cream and toasted almonds. My soji is tops. See, I even added an Indian line there for you. Tops. Vermicelli, payasam.
So
that's my Indian dessert.
Shani's looking for some credit here. She says, I drink from a copper jug. Does that help?
Very good. You're so good, Shani.
She drinks from the jug, so she's like, ah.
Oh, like this.
Like a Viking.
I didn't realize. And look, everything has gotten so westernized, just like yoga, right? Where yoga started off and people talk about the positions and having a Hindu basis. Now there's a yoga and a namaste and this, that, and it's become so super commercial. Mm-hmm. Just like the copper jugs, I've seen copper water bottles and I've seen those fancy little things that school kids. And I'm okay with that because as long as you're trying something that's great for your health, go for it, man.
Well, Vyasan is adding, it's the oldest surviving culture in the world. Indian history is very complex, and he carries on and says, it is polytheistic religion, so you're not forced to believe in any particular god. Yeah. You bring the ones in that obviously mean something to you. Yeah. I think that's cool. So,
I have to tell you, there's languages, right? There's like all of them, five, we've got five predominant Indian languages. I'm Tamil speaking. So a lot of Tamil people also in terms of the deity choices and the prayer choices within the Hinduism, we have our favorites. And same as the North Indians, the people that speak Telugu. So it's really cool.
A friend of mine just went to India and sent the most amazing pictures back of, but I think they were in, where were they? I don't want to get this wrong. I think
Mumbai,
it was right up in the north, but not Kashmir north. Rajasthan.
Rajasthan. She probably saw all those Mughal Empire temples and palaces, didn't she? Like,
oh man,
that's beautiful.
Magnificent. Yeah.
I've never been. I've never been to my motherland.
That's outrageous. You have got to go. It's crazy.
And Lee's actually going to go before me, and I'm so jealous.
What a cheek. You introduce him to Indian stuff, and then he goes to India before you. How outrageous.
He's got actual friends and colleagues that live in India. They've sent me saris as a gift. And like, no, you must come. And I was like, oh, man, you can't go before me. This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, my Indian card has just been taken back.
Totally.
My father was very impressed that Lee, he's going to love, they're going to love him. He's so fair. Dad, he's not fair, he's white, but it's fine. my dad's
that's amazing.
Yeah, so he'll get to go, and he's going to the south where my people come from. Like, my grandparents came from Madras, Pondicherry, that's where we're from, our Chennai.
Right,
and we've got relatives that still live there.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's where my heritage comes from.
That's amazing. Well, he should really have taken you along. I think it's outrageous. Okay, so there are a couple of things I want to get to this morning before we have to get to headlines. And you have you very seldom have like a powerful, outrageous opinion that you don't think anybody should argue with, but you feel quite strongly about certain things, Suresh, and I've seen you argue very passionately about the things you really care about. And people have been giving Kim Kardashian a hell of a hard time recently. And I mean, of all the people in the whole world who never thought they'd have to hear a defense of Kim Kardashian. I'm at the front of that queue, but I'm going to let you do this because you might just teach me something. People have been giving her hell because she what? She was too fat for a dress, or she was too thin for a dress, or what was the story? Because I didn't even see any of this. It was at the Met Gala. Oh, I saw how
Met Gala. Yeah,
it was her sister who wore the baseball cap with like almost like a wedding dress thing.
Oh, was, Kylie. Yes.
That was all I saw.
So Virgil Abloh, obviously one of the like most brilliant designers, he actually designed Kylie's outfit before he passed on. And I think it was called Gilded something. So if you understood the theme, it was almost – so he actually got the theme right, but people like, oh, she wore a trucker cap and with the veil and then this beautiful ensemble didn't make sense. But a lot of Met Gala outfits don't make sense if you understand.
No.
But if you read through and go, oh – so you pick up what is appropriate.
But you're very into fashion, so I'm not going to pretend I know what any of this is. Right?
So Blake Lively always nails it, and she had a tribute and a homage to the Statue of Liberty, right? So this beautiful convertible dress, that's what she wore. But Kim, Ripley's, believe it or not, the museum, they loaned her Marilyn Monroe's bedazzled, gorgeous sequined dress.
Oh.
It's a like nude ensemble. And she used that when she sang Happy Birthday to JFK. Remember that?
Oh, my God. That's a very famous dress. Hang on. I've got a picture of it. Let's just put this up on the screen so people can remember. All right. So there's a bit of history here then. So she borrowed this from the museum.
Yeah. So the museum said they'll loan it to her.
Look
this is the dress.
Yeah.
And I wish you found the picture of Marilyn in this dress because Marilyn's body,
I'll try and find it.
Yeah, and you know when we always talk about full-figured women, Marilyn had, she was gorgeous. But Kim, in order to, and Kim actually shared the fitting process of this dress because the back needed to be cut a little bit and then sewed in because Kim's derriere is a little bit bigger than Marilyn's.
No, Kim's derriere is bigger than everyone else's.
So she struggled to get it up.
Yeah,
so you can see. You have to see this video. So Kim borrowed this iconic, beautiful dress and it was in this museum. I think it's like 50 or 60 years old.
I've got to admit right up front, I didn't think this was going to be interesting and I was indulging you, but now I'm down the rabbit hole. So here's a picture of Marilyn wearing that very same dress. So listen, she's paying homage to the golden era of Hollywood. She's paying homage to the woman who was, at that stage, the most beautiful woman in the world and whose life was actually an absolute misery. I mean, she had the most difficult life. She was treated so badly by the Hollywood executives, by JFK, by society at large. And she died in depressing.
Yeah, and they probably labeled her.
She was called a slut.
They labeled her that bimbo.
Yeah,
yes,
bimbo.
That's exactly. And maybe Kim thought, this is what people are calling me in this century. You know, maybe I bring this back and realize
that's probably what it is. But I got to say, like, they both look so. Yeah. So did Kim have to get her body, because she couldn't alter the dress, right?
No, she couldn't. But they did kind of alter the back because Kim's, like I said, her bum is very differently shaped. Yes. So the dress is so slinky, it is like it's tapered. It's tapered to the bottom where she even walked like Marilyn. You have to see the video because I was like, wow. So it wasn't like Kim putting on a show. She walked like a penguin in this dress. She was like tiny little steps, the exact way Marilyn like hopped onto the stage and she did this, like she was like skimmering along.
All right,
and the dress that couldn't go up. Yeah.
So let's give Kim some credit. I mean, this is really this is putting a lot of thought into it. She's not just doing what most people would have done, attention seeking Kardashian style. This is quite an impressive homage that she's paying, and it's not all about her for a change, which is actually quite cool.
Correct.
All right.
I thought it was a beautiful tribute. So what happened was, so this dress, obviously Marilyn's physique, Kim's physique, completely different. They, you know, shaped differently. She's tiny in some places. Marilyn's bigger in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the boob area was like very pointy and coney because that's how Marilyn's style of bra used to be.
Right.
But Kim had to lose around seven kgs to fit into this dress. And she knew when she got the dress the first time, she was like, okay, obviously I'm a little bit big for this dress. But Kim, if you know her, she's like a fitness freak. Every day there are trainers in her house. So she's always been this person. She's somebody who's all about fitness and being healthy and all of that. And people lost their minds and they see her. First of all, when she rocks up on that carpet, people were like, oh, it's such a muted dress. It's just so boring. Because they always expect the worst of her. But this time she went really classy and
I mean,
she looked beautiful.
There are people who look like, I didn't watch the Met Gala because I'm not a fashionista like you are, but some of the Met Gala outfits are just stupid and people look outrageous. They look like they've been attacked by wild animals. They look like they've been shocked by electricity. I mean, some of them, I got to say though, that the one that kind of jumped out, and I can't believe we're talking about fashion on my show, but this is why I love having guest hosts on. I learned things. I wouldn't have known about this Marilyn dress if it wasn't for you. The one I did see, because people made a fuss of it and it was all over social media, was this Blake Lively outfit, which I got to say.
Yes, this is the one, Statue of Liberty. So do you see that bow that is on her hip?
Yeah. Okay. So let me explain this to people who are watching and, I mean, who are not watching, who are listening, because we've got more people on the podcast and they might be listening at whatever time. So Blake Lively was wearing this. It almost looks like copper and bronze colored kind of thing, but it swirls around her and it's very tight fitting, but it's also got this long train and she's wearing gloves up to, you know, the gloves go basically up to her armpits, and she looks really good. I mean, she's a beautiful-looking woman. That's Ryan Reynolds' wife, right?
That's right. And did you see him on the carpet? He was like, in awe, like he'd never seen her in a house, and they'd walked in together. But when she transformed this dress, that is when he was like jaw-dropping, because that is the beauty of this dress. Every detail was a tribute to New York and the Statue of Liberty, even the crown. Apparently, there's 12 little spikes, and the 12 spears represent part of the Statue of Liberty history or something like that. She's on the actual board. Blake Lively's on the Met Gala board. So she understands an assignment. She really gets it. And then she transformed this dress, because Statue of Liberty, if you see her colors, almost like a jade or a green. And then when she reversed this bow, it's the color changed. They actually came in, they pulled the gloves off, changed into this beautiful jade blue color. And then the entire dress flipped.
She always thinks about it. I'm not going to say I care about this stuff because I don't know anything about fashion. And I think this is just really, really rich people who've lost other reasons to wake up in the morning. So they have to find, you know, like dumb dress ups, you know, and you see this sometimes. It's, you know, it happened in the 1920s in Europe as well. Between the wars, people who had lots of money just didn't have much purpose, and they would just spend money on outrageous costume balls and things. I mean, that's where you get so many of these stories about people who would go attend these balls. There's Blake Lively with Ryan Reynolds looking at each other.
They're such a cute couple.
They are a cute couple. Mm. But I do like the fact that there's a bit of thought and there's a bit of a tribute to history here. And you know, I suppose anything, and this is something I discovered, if you sit down with anyone and you take the trouble to find out what they care about, you take the trouble to actually ask questions that are genuinely motivated by interest in that person you're talking to, you will discover that very few people are not worth the time, right? Even if it's a Hollywood celebrity you think is a vacuous idiot, even if it's a person that you've, I don't know, got stuck in a lift with, and you thought, this is not a person I would choose to spend my time with. If you do, and if you actually listen to people and you actually learn something from them, suddenly everyone becomes fascinating. We could all learn from this. Something I have to keep reminding myself.
This is how I met my husband. He knew nothing about my background, and that's where we found something common. It's fascinating. It really is. But I was talking about this dress and why I was so angry at people being cross at Kim.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. She had to lose the seven kgs to fit into this iconic, beautiful dress. And people thought, oh, it was so muted, but whatever it is. But then I thought, okay, you're getting angry at somebody to fit into a dress. How are you different from a bride who's shredding for a wedding? How it is then men and women who are, there's no difference. So why is she getting all this hate? And people were clumping all this responsibility. Kim, you're a public role model. You're not solely responsible for young people. You're not.
Shouldn't be losing the weight? It's bad as an example that she's making fat girls feel, or girls that can't get into perfect shape, she's making them feel less than? Is that what it was?
Yeah, there are people like Jamila Jalil, who I love as a commentator and as a presenter. Jamila Jalil actually is, I think she's a TV presenter in the States. She did one of the late night shows, I think just after David Letterman. I think she took over one of his late night shows. So she automatically, she's very against the Kardashians, okay? So you already know her narrative, and she's always calling out people like Khloe for fixing her nose. Khloe, you're beautiful already. You didn't have to do those extreme shakes. So she's constantly at the, she knows, she's always like, you'll know if there's an issue with the Kardashians, Jamila is the first one. And I love that she advocates for that because she wants women to appreciate and love who they are. And they don't, you don't need to change yourself physically, but it's a choice at the end of the day. If you want to fix your nose, fix your nose. I've been wanting to fix my teeth. It's my prerogative. It's what I want to do. You shouldn't be held by other people's standards at the end of the day. And you should never
do it for someone else. I think that's the key.
Correct.
I mean, like if you're a girl and you want to get a boob job or you want to lose some weight, you want to fix your nose, you want to do some plastic surgery, as long as it's for you and you don't take it to extremes, like we've all seen those people who've gone too far and then they start looking really terrible. But I don't see how that's anyone else's business.
So she went out and said, look, it's another bad example because what you're saying to young people, in order to look good or feel good, they need to lose all of these kilograms,
bullshit.
And it's not fair. And I was like, hold on, are we going to say the same thing to brides? What about people who take part in a bodybuilding?
Yeah,
they do
fitness
extreme diet.
Right.
Yes, they do. It's a sport. They do extreme diets because that is what they need to do. They need to condition their bodies to look a certain way
and
to be on stage. That's how they need muscles need to pop. Come.
You know what? If you can do something to change your body, transform yourself, 7 kilograms in what, a couple of weeks that's no small feat. That's impressive.
Yeah. And she put the work in. She's been putting the work in.
Right.
And it wasn't to impress her boyfriend or anything like that. It's because she really wanted to use this dress. I know brides, people. I was one of those brides. I wanted to make sure I looked good on my wedding day. And I made sure I cut out this and cut out that. And I made sure I looked good because I wanted to
bride.
Feel good. I'm doing it currently.
No one wants to be a fat bride. Everybody's going, oh, you know, it's a great wedding, but that bride is so fat.
And you know those dresses are tiny, man. Especially the ones you're ordering, if you're ordering from Shein or wherever you're ordering from, Elisab made a certain size. You want that dress, but also like you want to feel good, and that's how you feel as a bride. Do it. Just like if a bride chooses to wear pink, let her wear pink. Whatever makes her happy, or whatever makes a man happy. Guys, our life is way too short to be fussing and fighting over this person.
But
and
also,
that person.
No one appointed. You know what? I hate the way that everybody expects people who are just famous, and in the Kardashians' case, famous for being famous, that they must be role models to everyone else. They're not. They didn't ask for that job. No one stands up and goes, "I'm a role model." Now suddenly you have to behave a certain way. It's worse. If you ask me, the people who are telling you that you're a role model and you have to behave a certain way. Who the hell put them in charge of who? Nobody's going around saying, well, everything Kim Kardashian does, I'm going to do. And if they are, then that's their problem. It's nobody else's problem. It's ridiculous.
Yes. And should you make a choice for yourself?
Sure.
I mean, you come into this world, you have your own thoughts, your ideals, your values. I mean, something you can't blame. Also, why are you blaming celebrities all the time? Please take accountability for yourself.
Some people too
terrible. Blaming other things.
For all we know, there are people who've got Vladimir Putin as a role model. For all we know, there are people who've got, you know, Donald Trump as a role model.
Yeah.
Hitler. You don't know what people choose as a role model. So who the hell is this other late night show host we've never heard of who's going after? Leave people alone. Let them do what they want to do. I mean, I also think that there's an element of like, if you're going to be stupid enough to follow someone to the nth degree and like, commit yourself to being modeled upon that person in the true sense of the word role model, then you're probably going to be disappointed at some point. You know, if somebody says, you're a role model, the response to that person should always be, no, 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 no. That's you decided that. There's nothing on me because I might let you down. I might not live up to the standard in your head that you've created for me. So, I mean, Congo Chris says, if you think the Kardashians are role models, you should take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and sort your fucking life out. Yes. I agree.
Absolutely. And you said it so rightly. You know, you can't be putting that accountability on a role model. And they're human beings. They're going to disappoint you. Just like they say, never meet your idol. They're going to disappoint you. You know, so far I've been lucky. My idols have just beyond impressed me. But yeah,
who are you? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Here's Leanne Moll. Ah, your load shedding is finished.
Hey. Ta-da, there is light.
Yeah.
No water.
No water.
Mind you, for 24 hours.
Ugh, you
but
must,
there is light.
Are you in KZN?
Hi, Sushi. No, but you'd swear that I was in a small hut made of grass. On a
hilltop.
So you're going...
Because of no water, electricity.
Does it smell delightful? Have you started to put on extra like perfume and stuff like they did in the 1600s to disguise the fact that you smell because you haven't had a shower or bath?
Well, that was the case yesterday until I finally gave in and drove somewhere to shower. So smelling fresh as a daisy, you know, for now.
We've all developed like
we'll
these.
See how that goes.
We've all developed these survival tactics. Like I know if my water is off for an extended period, I know with you know I'll go to one of the nearest gyms and I'll just go and shower there because I've got a gym membership that I can go to any one of them. So I just go to whichever one is closest and then I'll have a shower there and then I'll take some fresh clothes along and then I can start my day. So we'll make a plan. It's not like people go, there's no water, so my whole life is ground to a halt. Anyway,
my family and friends, because of the KZN floods, their backup plan was baby wipes. People use baby wipes.
Oh,
you
definitely.
Come up with something.
Definitely. Yeah. That's actually a good plan. So you two haven't seen each other in a long time.
So long.
Babe, you look the same. How are you, Leo? Oh, wow.
I don't know if you've spoken yet about, if anything has been mentioned about cleaning yet this morning.
No.
No.
But well, I think about Sureshni so many times when I'm when I find a bit of gunk somewhere, like in my phone or on my stove or something, I'm like, ooh, Sureshni wouldn't like this.
Uh-oh.
Although she actually would. She enjoys cleaning things with like two.
What do you got there on your lap? Is that a dog?
This is my Miss Money Penny.
Oh,
she's
man.
She's rather rough.
Is she still going?
She's 12. This is my... Listen, she's had a stroke, guys. I didn't know about this.
Oh, Jesus.
But she's doing good. The doctor is like, she's defied everything. And my Harold Kumar, he's also around the corner. We now also have an Oliver. I've got a Buddy. He's a hamster.
Wow.
And Buddy keeps me on my toes. Okay, Buddy's my daughter's hamster.
You've got a whole menagerie.
And in winter... No, I live in a zoo, friends. And I even have a tortoise, but her name is Frida Robinson Ryder.
Frida.
So when we got Frida, when we bought the house, she was a resident of this property. And I said to the owner, listen, I'll buy this house. We will buy this house if you give us this tortoise because she's so sweet and I've never had a tortoise. She goes, okay, fine. And then she was Robinson and now she's Frida Robinson Ryder because obviously we married her into this family.
Of course,
but she's,
as a tortoise, she responds when you call her, right? I mean, obviously.
Listen, she does.
No.
Frida is...
They do.
She knows her name. We get her. She comes to the gate. Cucumbers. Oliver, when he was a little puppy, he actually thought he was part of this family. He would eat whatever she. He's very protective. He would crawl on his fours because I think he thought, okay, this is what happens. No, she's one of the beautiful pets. Like really a beautiful pet. But I must tell you the stress this hamster gives me because. They obviously sleep a lot. Now I'm panicking, like, am I going to wake up and the hamster's dead? And then I must tell my kid, oh, I'm so sorry about Buddy. So every day, I literally, like, a hamster watch. Okay, moving, and I tap the thing.
But hamsters...
Buddy, and then this poor thing is sleeping, and I was like,
we had hamsters when we were kids. Well, for a little while. There was a window period we had hamsters, and my brother and I. And these things were not very rewarding pets. I mean, they're not very bright.
No.
They kind of just go round and round in that wheel.
Oh,
if
no,
not in,
but you love
they're not
them
in the
as
wheel,
kids.
If they're not in the wheel, they, as Sureshni says, they're sleeping. They eat like seeds.
Sunflower seeds. Look, he does the Mission Impossible thing. He's upside down trying to get out of the tubes. And so he's entertaining. I even made him a ladder out of toothpicks. So, yes, I'm doing my innovative things. And when I clean. So he inspires my whole cleaning thing. And I think that's where we started this conversation. And Leanne knows I love cleaning. It was so extreme that when we were in studio, in our previous studio at 5FM, I used to bring earbuds to clean between the faders.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? And it was so pleasurable.
I used to do that.
I have to tell you quickly a story about a hamster because I saw something on my FYPE, my For You page TikTok. The other day, a vet, well, this is the vet telling the story. She has a little girl come in with a hamster and says, I don't know what's wrong with this hamster. It looks like it's dead. It just sits at the side of the cage, along the side of the cage. It doesn't eat, it doesn't clean, it doesn't use the bathroom, it doesn't move at all. I finally, take it out and It seems okay, but when I put it back in, it's just not enjoying itself. And the vet looks at this hamster and it's like, she's like, I don't understand what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have thought maybe this little girl handed over a dead hamster. But no, so she gives her a little examination and feels her pouches. Turns out that they let the hamster play on the fridge.
Yeah.
And she'd taken one of the tiny magnets and put it into her pouch. And she was magnetized to the side of the steel cage. Every time she got in there, she couldn't move.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you see, hamster's not a very rewarding.
Oh, that is funny, and that is brilliant. But
stupid animals. They really are stupid. All right, it is a Friday morning, which means we also get joined by Ben this morning. Ben Karpinski is live from his house. There he is. We've got Sureshi.
Hey, everybody.
Ben, we've got Leanne, we've got me. It's going to be a busy morning today. We also, later on, just to let you know, we're going to have Matthew Govender, who's a comedian, an actor, and an influencer on TikTok. He's hilarious. I was watching some of his videos last night because I'm not on TikTok, so I wouldn't have known. And Dari sent me a whole lot of links of all of his videos. He is really, really funny. He does a lot of these kind of Indian parent situations where the, hey, ma, and then the ma comes in and she like, what are you doing home so late? Were you drinking? Is that what you've been doing, drinking? That kind of thing. She's,
who's that girl? So who's that girl?
Yeah, who's that girl? It's really hilarious. So we're going to have him on a little bit later on, which is really cool. So, yeah, I mean, we were just talking, Ben, before you joined in about hamsters, because Sureshni's kid has got a hamster, and I was saying they're stupid pets. I had one when I was a kid, and I've never gone, oh, you know what I need in my life again is a hamster.
Well, like, do you let the hamster out, or is it only cage-based?
No, he's got a buddy's got a ball. There's an actual ball that you can buy, and then you put him in the ball, and then he runs an absolute racket and the whole time. And then obviously he knocks into most of the walls. That's how I know he's still okay. And then the dogs are super curious because all they do is follow this thing around. No, he's fascinating. And then my daughter loves animals, so now buddy's climbing on us and. Freak out, man. And she also wants a corn snake. And I said to her, listen,
no,
never going to happen. I think it's a great pet. But here's the thing, right? As an Indian person, I keep frozen ginger and garlic in my freezer. And it's usually in an ice cream container. I don't want to be opening up my freezer. And then now I'm seeing like potential food for a snake, like a rodent frozen.
Thank you.
And I don't want to see crickets, nothing. I don't want to be putting, no, it's never going to work. And you know what happens? Unfortunately, kids who want these things are never the ones who are going to have time to take care of him. So me, I've become the parent for a lot of these things. Look, she's great with her animals. She's excellent with her pets and buddies, very well taken care of. But it's those days when I was like, I don't want to be the one touching this thing. Now she's going to want a snake.
No, you don't want a snake. No. I have no reptile policy in my house. I don't care. Even if I had cats, no reptiles.
Pardon my reptile ignorance, but what's the significance of a corn snake? Is it just less
dangerous than a... Yeah, when she was younger, she started watching, sorry, I'm going to be making a school tie, and I'm really good at making a school tie.
Okay.
When she was younger, she saw this vet series, and he said, ideally for young kids, corn snakes were the friendliest, easiest to help, and
friendly.
I don't think they're venomous, or, yeah, they're friendly.
Friendly?
No, never going to happen. No,
they are very friendly.
Yeah, and do they like hamsters?
I'll send you a photo of
like,
the corn
no,
snake.
We can't have the snake and a hamster.
No,
are you
two won't get
Buddy's going to go.
No. Buddy's going to be eaten. There's no way. Like, there's something about reptiles. You know, we talk about the reptile brain, which is right in the middle of all the other brains, and it's the most primitive. There's no way you can switch off those instincts. I don't believe reptiles can be friendly. I don't get it at all. Sorry. Not my thing. I'm not buying it. But I will say this as well, and this is an interesting point, that a lot of people they have this need to like fill their lives with all these exotic and weird pets. I'm perfectly okay with dogs and maybe cats, and that's where I draw the line. I don't want birds. You know, these birds that live in cages, I always feel sorry for them. I want reptiles. And frankly, rodents aren't particularly interesting either. The weirdest of all is there's guinea pigs. I don't understand those things at all.
Oh, I had guinea pigs. So
they're
cute.
Adorable. They're so fluffy.
No, they're lovely. But you're right. And this is what we told our daughter, that it's not fair to see. I don't like seeing Buddy in this cage. I don't like seeing him trying to get out of the cage and like gnaw at the little edges. And I don't like it. And I said to her, this is going to be. She's had two hamsters, Scratch, who's now in our garden. Madeline resting in peace, bless her soul. And I've had a George Luca, who was also in some complex that I used to live in a Jenna Clifford box. I did a whole funeral for that hamster. This is the last hamster. You see, I love my pets, guys. Yeah. I did a whole Hindu funeral for George. And I said to her, I love this hamster, but I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't like seeing animals in cages. Our dogs don't have collars. They run free. That's how animals I feel. Obviously protected and stuff, but no, no more hamsters. Love them. Not going to happen.
Well, this is interesting. Guinea pigs are apparently a delicacy in Peru. Didn't know that. That's great. All right. So just a couple of things here. Ben, someone wanted to say that your photographs that you do, your phototherapy thing in the morning, which I think is just such a cool thing. We discussed it very briefly the other day. Robin says, it's a game changer. Thank you very much. It's also kind of a documentation of a whole year. So what Ben does to simplify this for people who don't know is he goes out every morning at what time is it? Like 5:30?
Yeah, 5:30 is my first photo / start of walk.
So he starts off with a picture of himself, so you can watch how he deteriorates through winter and then comes back.
Rapidly.
Yeah, and then he takes a picture of exactly the same place every morning, whether it's light or dark, at exactly that time. And you take a range of these pictures, and then you're going to put together, eventually, a montage of these things to show the progression over a 365-day period, which is amazing, not only because it requires enormous discipline to wake up every morning at probably, what, 5, half past 4, do this stuff, and then put together the whole edit at the end of it. It sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, but it helps, because last night I had some friends around, so I had a bit of wine, and I was so hungover this morning. Probably had about 3 glasses of wine, feeling rough.
Oh,
but
wine.
then because of this project, I have to be back on the road, and I feel great now. Whereas the past, you know, you would have like slept in and felt even probably worse. Now I'm feeling great.
We were talking just earlier, because obviously I would never talk about this stuff unless Sureshni was on, but she was telling me about Blake Lively at the Met Gala and how good she looked and everything. And then I put up a picture of Blake Lively with Ryan Reynolds, and everybody said, oh, look, it's Ben. So people still making those comparisons.
Maybe in the afternoon with good lighting. Definitely not in the morning right now.
Nah, listen, nobody in the early morning. Are you joking? I've never ever started this show and thought, wow, I look good today. Not once. So you know what? Not once.
What a rough way to start the day.
I know it is. And then you put yourself out there to like thousands of people potentially. So Tracy says, does Ben still do the cold showers?
Every day. And your body hates them every day. You know, obviously, like unlike reptiles, we're warmish. So, yeah, subjecting yourself to the cold water, it's never easy. But it's cool. It's just like you've always got to find ways to humble your inner bitch in life. Because, unfortunately, when that takes over, there's no hope for you.
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday to Pumi, I went to the doctor because I had this long, lingering cough situation, which thankfully is now gone. What were you
have to finish that sentence sooner. Long, you can't lingering. Say, I went to the doctor because I had this long...
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to get gross. Anyway,
tapeworm.
I went to the doctor. I got this because she said it's not a serious thing at all, which I was very thrilled about because you know how I think everything is going to be cancer and that's the end of my life. Even though I'm not a paranoid person, whenever I get like a persistent problem and it won't go away, I go, oh, this is it. This is definitely the thing that's going to take me. So luckily... everything's cool, and I woke up yesterday and today feeling much better. So I got back into an exercise regime too, which I'm thrilled about. But I've also started reading again, which is good. Before I go to sleep at night, none of that light in your eyes that you don't need, that blue light
that's
bad for you. By the way, if you're wondering where Sureshni went, she just popped off quickly to get her daughter ready for school. See, mother duties. You have to do these things.
And she's back.
She's back.
Yes. She was about to do a tie with one hand. I was so intrigued by that. And then she went around the
Actually, I did the tie while you were chatting, Ben, when you just joined. And I make a very good samosa tie. My husband and I are very competitive. And he went to this fancy boys' school. And I said, listen, my man, let me show you my primary school talent here. And every day I'm like, look at this tie. Poverty's principal should be phoning me and saying, Mrs. Ryder, this is the most perfect tie I've ever seen. He's never called me. And the principal is very much about that uniform being tip-top. He's all about the kids have to be smartly dressed. And every time I make this tie, I even made a video. I'm going to show Mr. Peanut, tell me like what you think of my tie. So I did the tie.
He's probably just jealous. He's just jealous. That's the only reason he hasn't said anything.
I know, and I'm very, and I was like, it's perfect, it sits beautifully, there isn't like one section too long, and I was like, he hasn't said anything, and then I had to do the hair and money for market day, because grade two is doing
market day,
and she has to, market day, and then she says to me, mommy, don't give me notes. So it's like an entrepreneurial day, each grade, so these are the babies, right? So first of all, I couldn't give her notes. I needed to give her coins. The little ones make things like brownies, and then they sell them like for R5, and you actually pay for a license. So you pay a shopkeeper's license. They give you your class table. It's a thing. It's actually brilliant to teach kids.
That's so educational. Like yesterday, I had a woman. I'm selling a sewing machine, and I had a woman yesterday phone and say,
"Jesus, you are for my seven
and how old are you?"
No,
my mum made me buy it. Did you go to Spinster's Tree to sell that?
And I've never used it once. She used it to hem some curtains, so now I'm like selling the thing. So I get a call from a woman who says, my daughters are 7 and 10, and they've got a sewing business, so they'd like to buy it. And she says in the background, Sophie, go and get your ledger. Let's see your budget.
Oh, my
God. She's got them working out a budget. I'm like, wow.
Sounds like she's running a child factory like they had in Victorian times where, you know, the workhouse.
It does. That's what it's and at that age, I was making my Barbies have sex. I mean, you know.
Oh, well, look, you. I want to ask the same question Ben asked just now. Like, how old are you to have a sewing machine? And you've been selling a lot of shit, Leanne. You've been selling a lot of shit on like Gumtree and everywhere else.
I had to.
Do you have an overlocker? Yeah, I had to. Perhaps. Do you have an overlocker for us to buy?
Is it a Singer? What brand do you have?
How many quilts do you have left?
Imbecile's the one. Do you know how? That's like the Ferrari of sewing machines. If you have an Imbecile, then it's very fancy.
Oh,
how much are you selling for? You're discounting, asking 2,000.
Sureshni, are you
what
actually,
model?
Are you stereotypically bargaining like an Indian first thing in the morning?
Listen, Jesus. There's no shame in that, friend. I use it up until today. Okay, what's your price? Match me. What's your best price? No. What's your best price?
I love it.
Yep. No, that's cool. Marketplace should have been created for Indian people in the first place. Guys, the deals we'd be giving you. But that's really awesome.
I'm telling you.
I'm a hoarder, so I've got a mini sewing machine. My family are in, that's their part of their trade, so I know all about these machines. I'm super interested.
I'll never forget a line that you taught me when we were talking about Indian food once, and you said, Joburg spices at Durban prices. And,
yes!
Yeah, remember that? And I still remember that. I'm like, yeah, you see, we pay too much here. Durban prices are better. Speaking of prices, 100%. Let me ask the three of you a question quickly, and it's something that maybe someone in the audience will answer too. I went and posted two letters yesterday. I still write handwritten letters, right? One of them went to Cape Town by courier, because you can't trust the post office, right? So I went to Postnet, posted one letter to Cape Town, and another one to London. What do you think that cost me by courier? Just a letter, a normal little letter on, you know, like one or two sheets of paper in an envelope.
I'm going to go with
seven, right?
R7.50.
R7.50. What do you reckon, Leanne?
It would have had to have been flown.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, no, wait. So hang a second. It's door-to-door, right?
So 3,000 rand.
3,000 rand. What do you think, Sureshni?
I'd say they'd weigh it. They look at the dimensions. Maybe a couple of stamps, 45 rand.
Okay, well.
Sorry, I'm gonna go back to 128 rand because I've just done the math.
You revised it up. Okay, so the closest of all is Beth, who guessed 700 rand for the two letters. Now, I'm sorry.
Who are you writing to? Is this person worth 700? Right. 700 rand for a letter?
Yeah, so look, for two letters. The Cape Town one was...
Could afford a sewing machine.
I know, from Leanne. I mean, 100... Well, so it was 180 rand for the Cape Town one, which I think is kind of ridiculous. But at least I know it'll get to this person. And 580 rand or whatever it was to London. Now, these are important letters. I don't normally... send post, and I suppose I could have used the post office and it would have cost me a fraction of that. You just never know whether it's actually going to get there or not because our post office is so cuck. But I suddenly thought, wow, They've made it so expensive that now you do have to consider email, even for someone like me who I do like to write the letters occasionally. But it shocked me, like 700 rand for 2 letters. It's crazy, right?
But Gareth, I think you can send and scan.
Yeah. Ben?
Mm. Yeah, but I think you can send like 5 kilograms of, I don't know, sweets or whatever for the same amount of money. I just don't think that, I think it's like a 0 to 5 kilogram kind of thing. So whether it's a dash of calligraphy or whether it's like diabetes that you want to send to someone, it's the same cost center, I think. Because I had to send 6 kilograms of something recently door to door. I think it cost 540 rand.
6 kilograms of something sounds very suspicious.
Sounds dodgy.
Yeah. What was it?
Well, I don't want to get into what. It's just boring what I was sending. I just.
Yeah. Was it protein powder, but?
No, it was sewing machine parts.
So it wasn't hard drugs?
No, of course not.
Okay. Carl says, Gareth, have you heard of email? Yeah, I know. And Chris as well. Look, screw you guys. I sometimes like to do something. When last did you write something? Like actually write with a pen?
I love all the time.
I keep a journal.
I'm writing right now, actually.
Yeah, you see, I write things all the time. I keep little notebooks when I'm in meetings. I write notes, that kind of thing. I like a bit of writing. My handwriting.
Did you have pen pals?
No.
Do you have a pen pal?
Leanne used to.
I had one. Yeah, I had one. Didn't last very long.
Where was she, Ben? Did she live in some like third world country, and you were the only person she could learn English from?
No, I remember there was a big thing. You would have to like send off 5 rand to like somewhere, and then you get like pen pals. Mm. And then I think I got one pen pal from like some Scandinavian country. It was a one-letter
thing. Wait, you paid for a pen pal? That's not how it works.
No, it's not like you got to pay for the network, right, to register as a person. But I was probably just writing letters to some Norwegian man with no pants sitting at home. And then I think I had a local pen pal. I think we got, like, she was in Nelspruit, and I think there was, like, 2 letters, and I don't know where it ended.
You probably got bored and ended it. I think that's hilarious. Well, I mean, listen.
I was 11 or 12.
That was the kind of social media of, you know, that era. There wasn't anything else. That was the best way to.
I had boyfriends I used to write to.
You thought they were boyfriends. They were also those pantsless men in Norway.
No, man.
No.
They were boyfriends that you met and then, you know, they lived far away. There was one in KZN and there was one in Portugal. Well, he was actually from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
He died after being hit by a truck.
Well, how did you find out about that?
He died because he was 85. Yeah, he was 85 from natural causes.
His friends wrote me a letter to say he died.
Oh shit! Because your letters were.
Did he leave you money at least, or something, estate?
Were your letters? Did they know that because your letters were piling up in his post box, and they were like, oh, this poor these Dutch guys are like. Arme vrouw in Zuid-Afrikaan, ze weet niet, hij is dood. And they were like, oh, we better reply to this stupid bitch, because otherwise she's going to keep writing. That's hilarious. All right, well, here we go. There are lots of people here who have also been posting. Gareth, you're the oldest person I know. Thanks very much, even though I'm not
exactly.
The one.
Don't rip me off about the sewing machine.
Yeah. Tracy says, I got a handwritten letter from a Jehovah's Witness the other day. I was super excited.
Oh, that's nice.
super excited about receiving a lovely letter in the mail until I started reading it, and it was 5 pages long. Jeez, okay.
What are they going to write for 5 pages? I thought the letter was just, open your door, please.
Yeah. Have you heard the good news about our Lord Jesus Christ?
The letter starts with knock, knock.
Yeah, right, exactly. 87 rand with a courier guy. Time to level up and open an account. That's what Inga says. No, I don't send stuff enough. But I was kind of shocked, so I thought I'd just drop that in there. Because they do a good job, and I'm sure the letters will get where they're going. But still, it's kind of ridiculous. I wish that it was easier to just order stuff on websites and have it delivered from overseas, because it's not easy. Right, and there's so many things that they just get lost in the post. There's some things I ordered like 6 years ago that I gave up on like 4 years ago. I realized like it's been 2 years. There's no way someone has stolen those things. They've been nicked at some post office along the way, probably here in South Africa, and that's it. I'm just done with it.
Yeah, I've got a recent story that I ordered a shirt for November. Mm-hmm. It was a really cool shirt. I'm actually wearing it now. Can't really see.
At least you've got it.
Well, this is the thing. So I ordered it through through Zubies, one of my favorite online characters, very mm-hmm. funny guy, and he had this really great shirt that I wanted, so I ordered it. And then nothing happened, and, like, you can't track it, and there was just months and months and months went by. And I just asked him, like, you know, what's happening with the shirt, and I live in a third world country, but if there's anything you can do to help me out, then I just don't know where it is, you yeah. know. I just really wanted the shirt. I want to support him. He's, like, one of my favorite people online. And then eventually it just took so long. He's like, dude, I'm just going to give you a refund. And I didn't, like, I felt bad because I wasn't asking for a refund. I just wanted the shirt. And then he refunded me. And then yesterday, literally, I get this dirty note from the post office. It's always a dirty note. Like, it's like thrown at my yeah. security officer at the office. And there it is. There's the shirt after all this time. But then I've still got to pay almost the exact same amount I paid for mm-hmm. the shirt is now in duties and yeah. clearances and all this other shit. And then you've got the indignity of going to the post office where you walk in there and it's like an absolute morgue.
Yeah.
You know, like in movies when they really exaggerate horrible jobs and there'll mm-hmm. be like a woman sitting there and she'll go like, and that's how she basically greets it.
Yeah.
And then the tech just everywhere. I don't know how they do it, but this woman literally takes my sheet, looks at it, walks to the back and comes out with this thing. It's like, Jesus. Is either the no packages in the back or she's just having a lucky day.
Well, I have to point out, like, the really irritating thing is you're paying all those duties and those taxes on it. And that's yeah. meant to go to the government in order to make sure the post office runs properly. So you're actually paying for something you didn't get again, which is outrageous.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, we've got to take a break at 7 o'clock. We'll be back with a whole bunch more in just a little while. CliffCentral.com, Friday morning. And we've got Sureshni Ryder. We've got Ben Karpinski. And we've got Leanne Moll. It's a busy Friday morning. We've also got Matthew Govender, the comedian and TikTok actor and influencer, coming up in just a little while. It's going to be lots of fun. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.